Welcome to Interparty Conflict, the podcast where we answer your questions so you can have the best tabletop gaming experience possible. My name is Gabe.
And my name is Jeff.
And we're going to answer your questions today. But first, I have a question for you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
What time is it?
It's 4 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry. I have another question then. Oh,
okay.
How are you doing this day at 4 o'clock?
At 4:03.
4:03.
Sorry.
3 minutes passed between when I asked that question.
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Been working.
Mm-hmm.
A few days ago, I did another game at the library, a little D&D game.
Oh, and right.
It went pretty well.
Yeah. I heard that there was a very interesting encounter.
There were a couple of interesting encounters. So I had been just making these myself,
mm-hmm.
but I found out recently that there is some product that somebody made that I think I got it from DM's Guild, I think, where it is like a collection of 1 hour adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's perfect. So
yeah.
I bought that. I got these two books. It's each one's like 5 adventures or so. And then so the first one I ran the other day, and it's these like 5 little mini adventures that if you want to, you can string together into a full session. But I didn't. I just ran each one individually.
Mm-hmm.
And the encounter involved the players. They're looking for these like 5 lost treasures. They go into this cave. They kill some goblins that are terrified of something, and then they continue on through the cave, and suddenly they get attacked by a swarm of tiny goblins.
Yeah.
Like little, like inch tall goblins or something.
Right, yeah.
And so the players get covered in them. They have to, like, you know, it's a swarm. You fight
yeah.
the swarm. And then the encounter right after that is with a giant who got shrunk down to goblin size. He also has a pet bear that is shrunk down to the size of a kitten. However, the shrinking effect on the bear is permanent, and the bear is a non-combatant. So there are stats in there for there are rules for if a player wants to take the bear as their pet.
Gotcha.
And one of the players did.
Okay.
So it went pretty well. There were 2 new kids there. They were, I want to say, high school. I can never tell how old kids are.
Right.
They looked like little babies to me, but I think they were probably in high school.
Gotcha.
And yeah, they seemed to have a really good time.
Mm.
One of them had played Pathfinder. The other one, I think, had played 5th edition a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So they had each played a little bit, but you know, they had a good time. It was a lot of fun. They'll probably come back next time.
And it makes me think of that, like, what would you rather fight? A bunch of...
It's a horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
It's like, what would you rather fight? A bunch of tiny goblins or a goblin-sized giant.
Right, right. And yeah, so it was a fun little encounter. And there are rules on there, like, because the shrinking effect on the giant is not permanent. So if the players take too long, the giant starts like getting bigger. It doesn't really have a game effect unless they don't do anything about it. Like if eventually he turns into a whole giant, but the players are going to kill him long before.
Gotcha.
Before that point. Yeah. And then the next one has a similar, not a non-combat encounter, but the next one has a similar encounter that's just like similarly memorable. I won't spoil it just in case anybody hears this.
Gotcha.
This episode. But, all right. So you want to go ahead and get into the episode?
Sure.
Cool. Jeff, I want you to imagine
mm-hmm.
that I hope this is not traumatic or anything. I hope you haven't ever had an experience like this. But
okay.
I want you to imagine you have been robbed.
Uh-oh.
Let's say your car was broken into. I won't bring it so close to home as to say your house was broken into, but you parked in a bad neighborhood or something.
Nothing closer to home than my actual home.
Exactly.
But go on.
Exactly. So you parked in a bad neighborhood or something. You didn't park under a street light, it was shady, whatever. And you come back and your car window is broken.
Oh no.
And you had some treasure in your car that
Crap.
Appears to be gone as well.
Dang it.
However, you file a police report.
Uh-huh.
You let due process do its thing. And you had already written off that treasure as just being gone. But you got a call from the police and they said, hey, we want you to come down to the station. We might have some news. So you get there and you see on a table, they've got your treasure.
Oh, yeah.
And so they go over. They make, you know, they verify that it's yours. Mm-hmm. They ask you some questions about it. You tell them whatever. And then so they give you your treasure back. I guess they caught the perpetrator. As you're taking your stuff, you just ask, like, hey, where was all of this? And one of the officers comes over and he says, well, son, we found it. in the dragon's horde. Because apparently the guy that robbed your car was he was a 30-foot tall red dragon.
Oh, okay.
You actually noticed that the window was slightly melted. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, there's when I was looking for a parking spot, somebody did warn me. I was like, oh, there's dragons in this neighborhood.
Yeah. There you go. Sorry, the small tangent. I'm trying to cut down on our tangents, but have you seen Bright?
No, I haven't seen it. I've listened to some stuff on it, though.
It's on Netflix. Yeah. I really liked it. I just listened to a podcast about it yesterday, and they hated it. I thought it was really good.
It's another one. It's another very, like, kind of split, you know, opinion things. There's a lot of those lately. Yeah.
I really liked the world building. It's, you know, it's got some flaws. There's some plot stuff that's a little weird, but I thought it was really fun. Mm-hmm. But it's like sort of modern day, and like there will be times where they'll show like a shot of the city, and oh, there's dragons flying around.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, yeah, dragons and stuff like that. I just remember like listening to a thing on it that was like the world building is kind of weird because like it's like there's these very key differences, like the fact that there's
right
that there's like, you know,
orcs there have been orcs and elves and forever,
but yet like
the world is still the same.
The world is pretty much almost identical to the point of like very specific
like cult. Shrek still exists. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, well, like, all right.
Anyway, yeah, it's a little weird, but I thought it was a fun movie. But that is not what our Dragon's Horde segment today is about.
Mm-hmm.
What if the item in the Dragon's Horde was just a copy? It was somehow a physical copy of the movie Bright.
Yeah, a Netflix DVD. Yes. Of, you know, Netflix original DVD.
Right. Well, that is not what it is today. Today, our item is actually an item that I came up with.
Uh-huh.
I created a bunch of items that I've submitted to Crit Academy, so possibly listen for some of these in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the items I think is just a really, really cool item. Very, very obvious inspiration drawn from somewhere else, but I just I've got a little bit of my own spin on it too.
Sure.
So this item is called the Mask of the Gray Ghost.
Ooh.
And I have a cool picture of this mask that I found on Twitter. Somebody posted it and I thought it was just perfect. And also I've changed the spelling of the word mask to be MASQUE.
Ooh.
Just to give it that extra little bit of sophistication.
Mask you.
Yes. So the Mask of the Gray Ghost is a mask that once belonged, or is said to have belonged, to the legendary assassin, the Gray Ghost.
Chris Ding.
Ding.
Yes. Yeah. Chris in our 5th edition campaign that we started way back when 5th edition first came out. He played a rogue. I don't remember what. It might have been the assassin archetype. I can't remember. Hmm. But he was playing a rogue, and his whole thing was he wanted to be like this quote unquote legendary assassin.
Right.
And you know, I played that up. There would be people that would see him like when he was wearing his outfit, and they would be like, oh my goodness, that's the Gray Ghost, and they would all run away or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And there was even a time that Zave's character was at a party and he stole a bunch of stuff, and somehow rumor got out that the Gray Ghost was there, and the Gray Ghost was the one that stole it.
Sure, sure.
Anyway, so this is a mask, is a black iron mask and cowl that once belonged to the Gray Ghost. While a player is wearing this mask, it gives them a pass without trace effect, making them immune to tracking except by magical means.
Cool.
Additionally, more importantly, all divination spells treat the wearer as if they are the Gray Ghost.
Mm.
So if a person sees you escape from a crime scene while wearing the mask and they attempt to determine who you are, or even to scry on you from afar, the only information they will gain is about the legendary assassin and not the person who's currently wearing the mask. And if nobody is currently wearing the mask, the spell fails. So if you are wearing the mask and someone tries to scry on the Gray Ghost, it'll show you wearing the mask, doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
If you take the moment you take the mask off, however, the spell fails, and then trying to scry on the Gray Ghost will no longer function.
Gotcha. So because that person effectively doesn't exist at that moment.
Exactly. Similarly, let's say Jeff is wearing the mask and someone tries to scry on Jeff, the spell will fail.
Because Jeff doesn't exist. There's only the Gray Ghost.
Exactly. There is no Zool. Jeff. There's only Zool. So, I mean, I suppose there could be a situation where, like, oh, they suspect that you're the Gray Ghost, and then they scry on you one moment, and it shows you. They scry on you another moment, and it doesn't work. And whatever. It's possible somebody could put that together. But they would have to know that you know, they would have to have some idea in the first place.
Yeah, they have to have some understanding of what's going on.
Right. But, like, this is all divination spells. So mm-hmm. if there were a detect good, for example, which there isn't in 5th edition. But, sure. I mean, in theory, you could use this in 3rd edition, too. If someone were to detect good on you, they wouldn't see your alignment. They would see the Grey Ghost's alignment while you're wearing the mask.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if you were, like, if a lich wore this mask, he would show up as a human assassin, you know, whatever
yeah.
the Grey Ghost is, rather than the creature type or whatever. There's actually a couple things I'm drawing on for inspiration from this. Probably the most obvious is, I think it's like the Grey Fox mask from Oblivion.
Yeah.
Very similar thing. It's a mask of a legendary assassin that when you're wearing it, any crimes you commit get attributed to the assassin instead.
Right.
You know, similar to what this would do. But also, there was a 3rd edition adventure that I ran a while back that had the players investigating a murder mystery. There was a murder that was committed in this small town. Supposedly, it was committed by this guy. And long story short, the whole town, it turns out, is full of werewolves.
Okay.
That's sort of a secret kept from the players. And, or at least a lot of the town is actually werewolves. It's just like a little secret. However, and the guy that was accused of the murder is a werewolf. But it wasn't him that committed the murder. It was actually this guy who had this magic artifact that turned him into a werewolf. But it didn't just turn him into a werewolf. It turned him into a specific werewolf.
Huh.
So the rest of the werewolves couldn't figure out who this guy was, because when he turned into that werewolf, he no longer had his original scent. He had the scent of this other werewolf.
Okay.
So he could just turn back to his human self while being followed by these other werewolves, and they'd be like, oh, the trail is just gone. All I'm smelling is these other people that go through this thoroughfare or whatever.
Gotcha.
So kind of combining those two, and also putting a little bit of flair from Chris's character from that campaign. So, yeah. So that's the Mask of the Grey Ghost.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for the Dragon's Horde. If anybody wanted to submit magic items for us to discuss, questions for us to talk about, or stories for the funeral pyre, how would they do so?
They could send us an email at interpartyconflict@gmail.com.
Yes. And we also are going to do a giveaway mm-hmm. for the Goblin Stone Adventure Chapel on the Cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
So our winner for today is Adam B.
Adam B.
Yes. Congratulations, Adam B. You should be getting an email within the next day or so.
Hey, Gabe.
Yes.
Adam B. the winner.
That's a real good one, Jeff.
Yeah. Top of my game. Woo! High five, Gabe. Sorry. Continue.
So if anybody would like to enter this drawing, what do they have to do, Jeff?
They can send us an email at interpartyconflict@gmail.com with the subject name Chapel on the Cliffs.
Yes, that's all you got to do. If you want to put anything in the body of the email, you can.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to.
You
could just put Chapel on the Cliffs. I think a few people already have. But yeah. Just send us an email, Chapel on the Cliffs, in the subject line.
Yep, that's all.
I also want to remind everybody, we have a Patreon, which is doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a dream last night where somebody, like, I don't know, gave us hundreds of thousands of dollars, which was pretty cool. I won't go any further because everybody hates hearing about dreams. But but if anybody was thinking that, you know, maybe they wouldn't like if I gave them several hundred thousand dollars, let me just say, I had a dream, and I in my dream, it was very favorable. So I would say that we probably would like it if you gave us several hundred thousand dollars.
You know, yeah, we've given it some thought. And you know what? Surprisingly, we would like more money.
Yeah. You know, maybe not every point in my life I would feel this way, but I feel right now having several hundred thousand dollars would be pretty cool. Yeah, so you can go to patreon.com/interpartyconflict.
Mm-hmm.
If you go there, we've got a few different tiers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're pretty close to hitting our next goal. Our next goal is going to be I'll be getting like new artwork.
Oh, sure.
For the show, for the Patreon, for just fun stuff. I haven't decided exactly what form the artwork will take.
Mm-hmm.
Might be caricature pictures of us.
Sure.
New logo. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, something cool once we get to the next. We're just a few dollars away. Then And we will do that.
Yeah, we'll be able to zhuzh up the presentation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still...
The podcast.
Still having fever dreams of having a dedicated website at some point. But, you know, we're looking at what our options are.
Yeah.
As far as that's concerned. Yeah. So check out patreon.com/interpartyconflict. Even just $1 a month gets you some cool rewards. I just came out with my second monthly fantasy fiction.
Oh, cool.
And this was about... our friend Justin, not Justin from Criticami, but one of our patrons, I wrote about his character, the Wolf.
Oh, the Wolf.
Yes. He's a halfling barbarian, and he goes on a little adventure by himself and some fun stuff happens. I had a lot of fun writing it, and I hope people have a lot of fun reading it. Yeah. So check that out. Anything you can give us would be super appreciated and would go towards making the show better.
Yeah. Even if it's just $1, it doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. But we've already released, if you pay $5 a month, we have one bonus episode out so far. We're about to record another one pretty soon that should go out. Actually should be out by the time this episode goes out.
Oh, sure.
So yeah, you get a bonus episode per month at $5 a month, and at $10 a month, you can partake in our monthly role-playing game, which so far has been D&D. We'll probably be D&D for a little while longer, but I want to do other games too.
Yeah.
And also, at $10 a month, I will write about your character for my monthly fantasy fiction.
Nice.
So I've got a few people in the queue, but after that,
yeah,
it's open for anybody.
Cool.
All right. So we'll go ahead and get into questions. I do just... Sorry to keep with all this admin, but head over to CritAcademy.com. Check out Crit Academy, the great podcast. They come up with lots of great stuff. And also D&D Character Lab. Two guys, they make characters and then pit them against each other. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. All right. Our first question comes from Sign of the Serpent. This was on Reddit. What are the best alternatives to hit points? Now, is he asking alternatives to how, like, cause we sort of talked about like hiding hit points from players and that sort of thing. Cause Justin from Crit Academy likes to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. He, in his game, he keeps track of the player's hit points.
Right,
and he just describes to the player like how they're feeling and so on.
But is this more just like an alternative to hit points?
Yeah. I think this is more a mechanical thing.
Maybe like instead of keeping track of like damage, you keep track of just the number of times you've gotten hit or something like that.
I guess, but in a way, isn't that still hit points? This is one, I don't know, usually when we bring in questions, I like to have a pretty good idea of like what I think the solution should be.
Sure.
But this one, I don't know. I have some ideas. So like there are some systems that don't deal with hit points.
Mm-hmm.
First one that comes to mind is Mutants and Masterminds.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In Mutants and Masterminds, you don't have hit points. You don't take damage. What happens is when something hits you, you make a save. Mm-hmm. So like a certain attack will have a save DC of, I don't know, 15 or something like that. If you make the save, you took no damage. The effect, the attack did not harm you in any way. If you fail the save, the amount by which you failed the save determines how much quote unquote damage you took.
Okay.
If you just failed it by one, then that means that like next time you make for all further damage saves, you have now a -1 penalty to your roll. And then like the more you fail by, the bigger your penalty. If you fail by, I believe it is 10 or more, you die.
Okay.
So instead of like having a number that you subtract from, it's that your bonus gets lower. It is still possible for you to roll a natural 20 and automatically succeed no matter how powerful the effect is.
Sure.
It's also powerful. I don't know if a natural 1 automatically kills you. Maybe I should have looked this up before bringing it up. Anyway, if you roll really, really low, it's possible for a normal attack to incapacitate you.
Yeah.
So that's how they deal with damage. You don't have hit points. You have the bonus to your roll gets lower, and then the end result is you eventually die.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. I think there might be something similar with that one page. Game the Witch is Dead or something like
that. Okay, by Grant Howitt.
I cannot remember the way it is, but I want to say
I could bring it up. It's on the internet.
I mean, it's only one page.
It is only one page.
Well, I want to say it has something to do with basically like you had like a role that like you didn't take damage. You just started getting penalties to that role, and then when you don't make a role, there's a chance that you could die. You know,
sure.
It's like because it's much more narrative. In that, like, they only had like four basic skills or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, you either make the save or you don't. And then if you don't, and with like enough penalties to it, you know, the DM could basically be like, okay, your character dies or loses a limb or something like that.
Sure, sure.
I think I was a bunny who had lost a rabbit's foot. Like I lost a foot. Oh no! Point. So I was a one-footed rabbit that could create fire.
Yeah,
like that.
In the game Binding of Isaac, mm-hmm. one of the characters starts off with what I suppose is like a lucky rabbit's foot.
But it's the cat's foot. No,
it's a human's foot.
Oh, a human foot.
It's a little human's foot with like a little gold thing on the top like a rabbit's foot would have, so it could connect to a keychain.
I'm thinking of like the cat head or something.
There
like
is
that.
A cat's paw you can get, but that's just like a cat's paw with like a little bone sticking out. That's much more gruesome.
Right.
Anyway. So I want to say my brother's game, the Mountain Witch, deals with hit points similarly to how Mutants and Masterminds does it, in that whenever you make a roll to overcome a challenge, your penalty, like if you fail, your further penalties get lower, mm-hmm. or your further rolls get additional penalties.
Yeah.
And then similarly, once you get below a certain, like anytime your end result is below a certain point, you die. In that game, though, the way that you overcome it is that you can give other players trust points, and then those players can give you trust points.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime you have to make a roll, because normally it's just like 1d6 versus 1d6, like you roll and the DM rolls, you can spend a trust point in order to roll, have your ally roll another die as well. And so basically, like you become more reliant on your friends the more hurt you get, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
However, the point of the game is that you can't really trust anybody.
Right. Isn't it that you can use that trust point to basically backstab them?
You very much can, yeah. Yes. So that's kind of how that game deals with it. I would say most games are kind of going to deal with hit points in a similar way.
Yeah.
In a way that isn't quite hit points, but still kind of... I don't know, something similar type of mechanic.
Yeah, it's more just a penalty system, or it's I'm trying to think of the terms. It's like a penalty, like a reward versus penalty, or it just like it's a cumulative like penalty thing. The more like you're not taking damage that's being taken away from your hit point pool. You're accumulating a penalty to preventing yourself from dying.
Yeah,
some way. I don't know, but yeah, that's definitely another way to do it. I don't know if that'd be easily introduced into D&D.
Yeah, I don't know if this is necessarily for D&D. I think this is just for role playing games in general.
Sure.
And I mean, you can't always use D&D and just go a little bit more abstract in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded of a couple RPGs that I listened to in the one-shot RPG. I mentioned the Terrible RPG. I think that the way that they deal with damage has something to do with like tearing off your sheet. I don't know if that is meant to represent damage, but like that's kind of, if you want to succeed and stuff, you have to tear off more and more of your sheet,
mm-hmm.
and eventually you run out of sheet, and then I guess you're out of the thing. Another game that I watched them, or that I listened to them play, was called All Out of Bubblegum.
Okay, yeah.
And the idea is, so okay, there's the movie They Live, which had a very famous quote from what the lead actor was, he was wrestler Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point in the movie which he says this quote, which was then taken to be in all of the Duke Nukem games. But
right,
his quote is, I came here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yeah.
And then in the Duke Nukem games, they actually switched I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum. I have... This is a huge tangent. I'm not going to go on this tangent, but I have different feelings about each wording. I think that each one has merit. Anyway, so the idea in this game is that you have a line, you have like seven pieces, I think it's 10. You have 10 pieces of bubble gum in front of you. Each time you have to make some sort of like a check, basically you are going to either do something, you are either going to kick ass or mm-hmm. you're going to do something not kick ass.
Right.
You're either going to do something that is a normal, ordinary task that a normal person would do, or you're going to go out of your comfort zone and do something that is kick-ass. when you have 10 pieces of bubble gum, in order to do an ordinary task, you roll a d10, you just have to get under a 10.
Uh-huh.
So like you're not going to fail. If you want to, I'm probably getting these mechanics a little bit wrong, but it's anyway. If you want to do something that is kick-ass, you have to roll over the number of pieces of bubble gum that you have. If you're doing an ordinary task, you have to roll under the number. So normally you can only do an ordinary task. However, you can automatically succeed at any kick-ass action by discarding a piece of bubble gum, or I like to imagine by eating that piece of bubble gum.
Uh-huh.
So like at the beginning, you can only do ordinary tasks. You have to automatically succeed on something kick-ass to start doing it. But then the more kick-ass things you do, the more you are able to do kick-ass things. However, the less you are able to do ordinary things.
Sure.
So if you see a challenge, the further in the game you get, the less likely you are to overcome that challenge in an ordinary way. You can't just, you know, ask someone to get out of the way. You have to roundhouse kick them and knock them out of the way or whatever.
Okay.
Or something like that. So that's kind of like, I think that the way that it deals with damage is that, like, if you fail, you then have to like give up a piece of bubble gum or something.
Sure, sure.
I'm sorry, I'm blanking a bit on these some of these details.
Yeah. That's pretty funny though. We're like basically the downside is eventually
you are just kick-ass.
Kick-ass. And like it's not as easy to do things that way. You
right.
think that's the easy way to do things. But
right.
but I mean like, you know, it probably takes a lot of effort to do very specific tasks, but in a like action hero style kick-ass kind of way where you can't just break down a door. You have to make it explode or something.
Right, right. Because I guess when you really get down to it, hit points, although in D&D hit points are separate from success or failure, it really is kind of success or failure. Because if you're trying to just like overcome a challenge, if it's outside of combat, it's going to be determined by a dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
Combat itself is kind of just another challenge that needs to be overcome. It's just one that is much more like zoomed in.
Sure.
So rather than it being decided by one dice roll, it's decided by a bunch of dice rolls and this other mechanic and so on with hit points.
Yeah. I just played Warhammer yesterday, and like comparing combat with something like D&D with Warhammer, and Warhammer kind of goes even more to the extreme where like you roll a dice to see if you hit.
Yeah.
Then you roll a dice to see if you would do damage.
Okay.
Then the enemy rolls a dice to see if they can like, they basically roll a save on the damage.
Yeah.
And then there's like other things that they like, there's a couple other like steps to that can come depending on like what type of unit it is and stuff like
sure,
that.
So
it's just like, so you're like, it adds like two rolls of like, okay, like I'm going to see how much. If I do damage, like see if you hit, see if the hit does damage, and then you can roll to see how much damage that does, depending on the weapon.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, the target unit has to roll to save it. So it's just like you're rolling like five different dice just to see do I do damage to that that unit.
And I mean, for a game that's that mechanical, I guess that's what they wanted when designing the game.
I guess so, yeah. And there's like, I guess it helps balance it. And it's just because there's so many, like, because like one unit can be could be 10 people that can shoot three times. So you're rolling 30 dice.
Yeah.
It's just another step for that to whittle down. So it's like, okay, like most enemies, most models only have like one or two hit points and might only have like 5 to 10 unit, you know, models per unit.
Yeah.
So, like, if every time my guys fire, they shoot 30 times, and you're taking, you know, potentially taking 30 damage, like, that's going to wipe them out. But if you have to roll 30 to see if they hit, and then you roll, like, half of those to see if they wound, you only get half of those, so and then you see half of those wound, and then so they roll the save, and only half of them get through. So, like, okay, could have potentially done 30 damage, but I only did 5.
Sure.
I don't know. But... that's a whole other.
That reminds me a lot of the collectible dice game I used to play, Dragon Dice.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I mean, I feel like I've heard it described as Warhammer meets Magic the Gathering. But in that, basically, you have an army of dice. Each die represents like a unit in your army or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when you attack, you roll all your dice. Depending on what icons come up on your dice, that determines how much damage you do. And then when you take damage, those dice get killed. So the more damage you take, the less damage you are able to deal out because you have fewer units.
Right, yeah.
Now that makes me think, what if there were a game where every time you took damage, you lost a magic item? Now, of course, you would have to have a whole bunch of magic items, but like each magic item does something different. And each time you take a damage, each time you take a point of damage or whatever, you have to give up one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all of these different options, and then you have to decide which option can I do without? Because I just took a point of damage.
Yeah.
I don't want to get rid of this sword that lets me deal damage back. I don't want to give up this armor that maybe negates damage or makes me take less damage or less likely to take damage.
That,
do I want to give up this thing that lets me fly or something?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that actually makes me think of Magic the Gathering, just like a trading card game where, like, you know, they attack with their card and you have to defend with yours, and you get to, you pick, okay, like, if I just let this through, it does damage to me and I, you know, I can get closer to losing, or I could put one of my cards in the way and that one dies, but then I lose that card.
Sure.
You know, so, I don't know.
Yeah, so if you're looking for an alternative to hit points, you know, I think either something that is either some mechanic that's going to change your rolls, which is what a lot of systems do, or something that's going to make you give up some sort of a resource.
Yeah.
And that resource will probably make you less skilled at dealing damage in the future. I mean, really that's kind of what it's got to be. One of those things. It's got to be
sure
something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Our next question comes from Vice Versa 951. This was on Reddit as well. Could you enjoy a game with no conflict?
Now, this is something that I've been trying to decide on. I feel like yes, but what would such a game look like?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was getting to on it too. It's just like I could see it being fun at least for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have the longevity of something that's gonna like of a conflict arising at least every once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really picture it. Trying to picture it is kind of difficult.
I feel like it really calls into question, how do you define conflict?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, do you just define it as like, if there's roles that have a chance of failure, does that count as conflict?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like a chance of failing or something, like risk.
Yeah.
Is undergoing some sort of like risky situation. Is that conflict, you know, like, or taking risks? I don't think so. Not necessarily. I wouldn't say that's conflict. Cause yeah, you could say a game like Settlers of Catan.
Yeah.
You can almost say that doesn't inherently have conflict in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of that game. I haven't played it in a long time. I know there are like cards in it that have like armies. Maybe there's like military. Like
I've never actually played it.
It's just a tile game. Like there's trading and stuff, and like you could create conflict in it between the players. Like or you could just like play to what you have and just keep going, and then like you know, hope you win.
Yeah.
So that like the conflict between the players is more, you know, created by the players. Then again, I could be missing a few mechanics that I can't quite remember.
Let me sort of I'm gonna sort of blend this with the next question.
Sure.
Actually, if you want to go ahead and read the next question.
All right. This was from Rob on N World. What makes a compelling story for D&D or any tabletop role-playing game?
Yeah. So, well, I wanted to combine it with this one because I almost feel like, well, let me ask you, could you enjoy a story with no conflict?
I don't know.
Now, on one hand, I feel like, well, no, because then what would the story be about?
Right.
But I think that there have been... Okay, so there's a... Did you ever used to watch Reading Rainbow?
Yeah, yeah.
LeVar Burton started a podcast within the last like year or two.
Right,
yeah. And it's basically Reading Rainbow, but for adults.
Right, okay.
It's called LeVar Burton Reads. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's just each episode is him reading some piece of short fiction. It's a lot of fun. He always ends it with, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. But listening to this, it's I've gotten to you know, it's gotten me to gotten me into a lot more short fiction. And it's sort of made me broaden my horizons a little bit on like what is conflict, because there are a few stories that he's read so far that when listening to them, the story to me listening, the story just kind of ends. And then that's because this whole time I've been waiting for there to be a conflict. And then either there isn't a conflict or that conflict doesn't come in a form that I am expecting.
Okay.
And so I suppose I could enjoy a story that had no conflict as long as I liked the characters and what the characters were trying to do. But I guess, see, it comes down to what's the definition of conflict? Because if somebody is trying to achieve a goal, does that mean that the conflict is whether they're going to achieve that goal? Because you can have a character trying to achieve a goal with no obvious resistance, like they just haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that there's conflict or not?
Hmm.
The reason I wanted to bring in the second question is because this was Rob. He actually posted this on. He replied to a thing that I posted on N-World a long time ago with this question. He also posted it as a thing just for general chat. And a lot of the replies for what makes a compelling story for D&D or other tabletop games is a lot of people said conflict.
Okay.
However, I don't know if that is 100% accurate. I think I could be on board for a D&D game if there were no conflict, if I just liked the characters enough. If we were to sit down at the gaming table and I were to say, okay, guys, what do you want to do with your characters? And one of the characters was like, oh, I want to build a house. I want to build a hideout for our characters. There isn't necessarily an inherent conflict to that.
Right.
Sure, I can make you make some checks in order to succeed.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you aren't. That doesn't mean that there is necessarily conflict.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean that there's a chance you might not succeed. I've said before that the game isn't really fun if there's no chance of failure. And I think on a macro level, that's definitely true. But like for a smaller scale game, I feel like it could be fun if it was kind of just like, hey, come up with something cool you're going to do. Cool, yeah. You do it. Hey, you come up with something cool you're going to do. You do it too. And then even that you can have a collaborative storytelling game or a collaborative story where it's just you guys talking about cool, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be different. Maybe some people would say that's not a game.
Sure.
Now, I think that's a valid argument, but it would still be enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I could enjoy a game with no conflict, not for a very long time, but if it was just kind of a short little like, hey, let's come up with some cool, fun stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I could enjoy that. And I would even possibly call it a game.
Yeah. Yeah, like in D&D, they could do like a filler adventure where there isn't really much conflict.
Yeah,
it's more just about character development or something.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've run short sessions, or maybe like not everybody showed up, so it was just like a one-on-one session or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've run sessions where there really wasn't a conflict. There was things that could fail, but again, does that mean conflict or not?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like not always.
Yeah, and I guess, I don't know, like if a game with no conflict, like strictly, absolutely no conflict, or just like a more like story wise, no conflict, like would a random encounter necessarily be considered conflict as far as the story goes? Or if it's just like, oh, that was some combat, like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just, that just happens. It like, you know, that's just the way that the, cause we were building that house next to the woodlands and there's wolves.
Sure.
And we had to fight the wolves. Is that conflict?
Is that conflict?
It's combat, which combat, I guess, is a conflict. I mean,
literally speaking, is conflict,
yes. It's a conflict. But as far as, like, your as far as like the theme of your game or like the or like your story that you're trying to tell, like would you consider that conflict?
Sure. There, another thing that comes to mind in regards to stories with little or no conflict. Mm. Have I ever shown you, there was a movie just out of high school. There was a movie that I was crazy about for a little while. It's going to sound ridiculous. Uh-huh. It was a movie called Shower.
Okay.
Did I ever show you Shower?
I don't know if I've seen that.
I know my wife has seen Shower because I made her watch it. I'm pretty sure. And I don't think she liked it. And then like, I know I showed it to Jay at some point. Long, long, long time ago. When I was in high school, I was in a Blockbuster Video. So just dating this a little bit. Uh-huh. It was a Blockbuster Video, and I saw there was a DVD case. Might have even been a VHS case. I can't remember. It was probably a DVD case. And it was just these like three Chinese guys like in towels smiling at each other. And it just said Shower. And I was like, what in the world could this movie possibly be? Well, I ended up when I eventually found out about ordering movies online. I was like, oh, let me see what this movie is.
Uh-huh.
And it's just kind of like a little slice of life movie about there's this old man who lives in China. He runs a bathhouse.
Okay.
And then the older of his two sons, who has moved away, comes back home. You find out because the younger of his two sons, who is mentally handicapped, sent a postcard to his brother implying that their father had died. And so the older of the two brothers comes home expecting his father to be dead and to come and sort out his family's affairs or whatever, gets there and realizes, no, that was just my brother, you know, just being a goof. And so then the movie is just kind of like the stuff that goes on in this bathhouse for that. And it's not salacious. Don't worry. It's an all male bathhouse where they just like guys just talk about like their problems and stuff.
Sure, sure.
And there are little mini conflicts in the story, I guess. Like there's a subplot about this one guy in town who he is in trouble with like a loan shark, and the loan shark shows up at the bathhouse and like tries to beat the guy up, and they have to like call the cops or whatever. And so there's like little subplots, but I would not say there is a conflict in this movie.
Mm.
Yet I still enjoy watching it.
Sure.
I would enjoy playing in a game that was just like a little slice of life. Maybe not for a long period of time. I would probably eventually get sick of, okay, yeah, I'm going to roll to see how much harvest my farm has season or whatever. But there's games like Harvest Moon where the whole game is you are just completing this task, complete this task, complete this task, most of which are even assigned by you. And if you fail, the only penalty is, oh, I have to do it again, or I have less money now.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say that games like that necessarily have a conflict. Now, later Harvest Moon games did involve conflict. Stardew Valley, for example, does have a conflict of, well, if you don't complete this thing, then like the town's going to get bought out by this other company or something.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I've kind of ignored that in my playthrough.
Gotcha.
But yeah, yeah, there's just like a chain store that comes into town or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. But like that's not what the game is about.
Right.
That's just one of the things that you can do in the game you want to.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've mostly just been focusing just on building my farm, and like I haven't even really talked much to the townspeople, even though that's a big part of it too.
Exactly. Yeah. So then that makes me ask, like, well, if it's not conflict that makes, because I would say Stardew Valley and Harvest Moon are role-playing games. I think they are classified as role-playing games. You do play a character, you do what you want, you take that character along a path that you want that character to go on. You know, it's not all predetermined. So what makes that game compelling if it's not conflict?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say a role-playing game, a tabletop role-playing game, it can be made compelling for lots of reasons. I guess it's more asking what makes a compelling story for a tabletop role-playing game.
Sure.
But I would say the characters are a big part in what makes a story compelling, what makes a game compelling. If you like the characters, you're probably going to be invested in what they do, even if there isn't necessarily a chance of failure or if there isn't an overt conflict.
Mm.
Now, again, maybe that won't last for a super long time. Maybe that won't be a compelling story in the novel sense, but maybe a compelling story for just like a short story. Mm-hmm. I would read a short story about characters that I like doing something simple. You know, it depends on how the writing is done. Depends on how the story is told. I don't know. Beyond that, like, what is it that makes a game compelling, whether it's the game or the story, if it's right. not conflict?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that especially with role-playing games, I think that a large amount of what makes it fun is wish fulfillment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, getting to do stuff that you can't do in real life mm-hmm. is fun. If there's a superhero game or something like that where you can have the superpowers you wish you could have in real life, I think you'd probably be more compelled to play that. You'd be more compelled to follow the story with less conflict because it's, I can imagine myself flying, or I can imagine right. myself shooting fireballs or whatever.
So we just played Mutants and Mastermind, but the setting was just the real world.
I mean,
us in our exact situations, except for we suddenly have superpowers.
I did very much want to run a game like that a long time ago. Because I think when we were in high school, like, Jay loved Wolverine's powers.
Yeah.
You wanted to be able to fly. Mm-hmm. I wished I could have duplicates of myself.
Yeah.
I don't remember what Steve was. And so I think I was probably trying to write. I was thinking about writing a story about us, like us, the yeah, people, sure. just randomly getting superpowers. And I don't know if I ever, I think I probably tried to stat myself out in the game. I don't know if I statted out anybody else, but.
Yeah, I think I remember. I do remember that time. And I do remember, yeah, trying to like, it's like, okay, well, flying's not like that spectacular of a power when you compare it to all the other powers
yeah,
of superheroes,
yeah.
when in fact most superheroes can fly, but they can also do this other crap too.
Sure, sure.
But I think like in like the powers book, they were like it's scaled. There was like different levels of the power, but it was so ridiculously exponential that it was just silly.
I think we talked about this with Ball of Arms Man. because that came from the same exponential growth. It's all like, right. okay, you can have one additional limb, two additional limbs, four additional limbs, 8, 16, 32. Eventually, you've got a million extra limbs.
Yeah.
And you're a ball of arms.
There was space flight or something like that.
Yeah.
There was like a different power that was more specific to like flying in space or something
like
that.
Crossing like light years worth of yeah. space.
Yeah. And it was like you travel the speed of light, you travel, you know, 64, 100, you know, like, a, you know, 512 times the speed of light or
yeah,
something,
yeah.
something ridiculous. It was like, you know, I think like the final level of like the flight power is like, the flight one was like, you're basically in a movement, in a turn's worth of movement,
yeah,
you can be anywhere,
yeah,
on the planet. And then the space one is like, and in a turn's worth of movement, you're anywhere in the universe.
Sure,
it's just,
sure.
You're just that fast, ridiculously. It was just silly.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's like sort of day to day stuff, even if some of that day to day stuff is sort of like technically conflict,
mm-hmm.
like I wouldn't count. I don't think anybody would count hunting as a conflict.
Okay.
You're still fighting something.
Yeah.
Like, you're still basically, you're sneaking up on something and attacking it. Maybe it attacks back.
Yeah.
But you're hunting. You wouldn't necessarily count that as a conflict, you know, even though it is a fight for survival, at the very least on the hunted, you know, things side.
Sure,
like
sure.
It's fighting for its life. In its story, that is a big conflict.
Yeah.
In your story, maybe not so much. Like, you're just like, oh, I'm just getting food for dinner. Like,
sure.
Like, we have some grain saved up. We could totally eat for a few months even if I didn't go out and hunt. But you know what? I want some meat tonight, so I'm going to go out and hunt this, you know, chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
Chicken hunting.
Yeah, so I like I said, it's going to really depend on how you define conflict.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I would say, yeah, I could enjoy a game with no conflict, just not for...
Yeah.
It would take some crazy ideas to keep me interested for a long period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think you could do a whole campaign with no conflict.
But like one session, absolutely. I can guarantee you I've run at least one session that had no overt conflict.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what makes a compelling story, like I mean, a lot of people said conflict, and I think in the long term, sure, mm-hmm. like what the conflict is probably going to interest you more. But like, look at any like long-term TV show, whatever the conflict was at the beginning is not what the conflict is going to be after a few seasons. It's going to have changed.
Yeah.
Yet you still are invested. So it can't just be the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be more about what's all encompassing about it. It's like the characters, I think.
Yeah.
The characters and their goals and motivations are probably going to make a more compelling story. Now in a role-playing game, the players are in charge of, you know, their own motivations and their own actions and so on. So is a compelling D&D game based on the players?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it based on NPCs?
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm sure you can have a compelling role-playing game without NPCs, right?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's definitely possible. Talking about shows, yeah, that makes me think, like, most of the time when I'm here, like, oh, that show went downhill at this season or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I want to say, like, as far as what I hear about stuff like that, like, I feel like most of the time it is, like, about characters. Like, oh, I don't like what they did with this character.
Yeah.
You know, like, there will definitely be where it's like, okay, like, this story is not going, like, it's like, okay, there's not much going on story-wise or plot-wise or something like that. But a lot of times I feel like it is more pointed at specific characters.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this show is going downhill because this character and this character were, like, there was so much going on in the first season for them, and then it feels like the writers in the second season are just forgetting them.
Sure.
And so I'm not going to watch it anymore because I was into these characters. I wasn't into the necessarily specific conflicts they were in. I was into that character's development.
Yeah.
Like, in Dragon Ball Super.
Sure.
A lot of people's criticisms on it are some of the characters, it's like Gohan became a father. He had a family and stuff like that, so he wasn't fighting anymore. And then and then they sort of built him up to maybe he's going to get back into fighting again. And then he just but he didn't become that important as far as the fighting went. Like, they brought him back to the fighting part of the show.
Yeah.
But it still basically just comes down to Goku when it comes to the fighting conflict, stuff like that. So it's like, oh, well, there are plenty of people who are Gohan fans that watch the show for Gohan. Yeah. And then they find out, like, oh, all right, they're not really going to do anything with him. He's just there to fill out a slot. You know,
sure. Like he's there because, well, he was in the previous show.
Yeah.
So I guess we got to do something with him.
Right. So, you know. Yeah, so yeah, I think compelling story doesn't necessarily need to have conflict. At least it doesn't need to focus on the conflict.
Or at least that's not what makes the story compelling.
Sure.
I don't think. I would say it is more the characters.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I guess it's like how those characters deal with conflict.
Sure.
But not necessarily the conflict itself.
Like, yeah, because, like, I guarantee you, look at any show that you really like, there are going to be plot lines that are stupid. Mm-hmm. And that you would not care about if it weren't on that show. If it were on a different show, you would not care about that same conflict.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think it is much less about the conflict and more about
It's just like, I want to see how this character deals with this situation. Not sure. Like, I want to see that situation. It's like, I've seen that. Like, you know, plenty of shows and movies and stuff where, like, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen this done before, but I haven't seen it done with this character yet. I want to see that.
Sure.
It's like, I want to see how Thor deals with tax season.
I suppose. How is Thor going to get the A on that test?
Yeah, the Thor goes to get his, like, GED or something. Like
yeah. That. All right. Well, I think we've done a satisfactory enough answer to those questions. I don't think any of these really have a definitive answer.
Gabe, for a show called Inter-Party Conflict, we're not very set on what conflict means.
Yeah. You dang it, Jeff.
I wasn't gonna bring that up. Darn it. Crap. All right, start over.
no, so I think we did a I think we've answered the questions about as well as we can.
Yeah, I feel. Yeah.
You know, hey, if anybody feels differently about any of these, please let us know. If you think you have a better idea of what makes a story compelling, mm-hmm. let us know. If you've run a session or a game that had no conflict and it went well or it went poorly, shoot, let us know.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Let us know in the comments.
Yes. Although, where would our comments? Well, I guess.
I don't know.
I post this thing on so many different places.
Sure, sure, yeah.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for questions. So let's take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. Let's think about that lack of conflict that we've got here. High five, Jeff.
High five.
Now, if we missed, would that have been a conflict?
Or like the action between our hands, is that conflict?
Ooh, I mean, it's maybe. Mm. Anyway, so
jeez.
we're going to toss another log onto the funeral pyre. So our funeral pyre story for today was submitted by Damien from Adventures in Aurelia, and his story goes, he says this is not his story, it's a story from a campaign he ran, so I suppose we can allow that.
Okay.
We've got such strict rules, Jeff.
Yes.
If we don't follow those rules, it's against the law. Anyway, so his story goes, meet Pavel. Pavel, I'm sorry, I'm pronouncing this Pavel, it's P-A-V-E-L. I'm pronouncing it Pavel because that's how the name was pronounced in Neverwinter Nights.
Oh, yeah, so Pavel,
Every time I see P-A-V-E-L, that's how I pronounce it. I don't know if that's actually how it's pronounced or not. If not, I apologize. Because also in Dark Souls, there's Havel. I guess I pronounce it Havel, and it's the same thing, but with
an H. Sure.
But I guess it could be Havel. I don't know. I'm going to pronounce it Pavel. So,
sure.
So deal with it. Meet Pavel. Pavel is a remarkably average guy. We rolled stats for the campaign, and with his human racial modifiers, he had a maximum score of 14. Pavel was young and naive, but he wanted to go do good in the world. A very devout cleric, he offered to help whenever possible, to the point of annoyance. Pavel is sent on his first real mission with a small band of adventurers. Among them is an old gnome wizard with multiple personality disorder.
Cool.
This is gonna end well. I say about the story that's explicitly about a character dying. After being ambushed by a group of goblins, the wizard casts Thunderwave. Mm. The cube includes three goblins and Pavel. The three goblins make their saves. Pavel does not. Pavel has 8 max hit points. The Thunderwave deals maximum damage, 16, and Pavel is no more.
Oof. Oof. Like when you're dealt twice your maximum hit points.
Instant death.
And yeah. And it's Thunderwave. So basically it's just a Thunderwave that's so powerful it just kind of vaporizes.
Yeah, I imagine you get blown. You get blowed up.
You get.
Yeah, I'm picturing like in Dragon Ball Z when they power up so much that like their sphere of power around them like
right.
blasts people away.
Right. Yeah. There's just a crater
yes.
all around them except for like one tiny spire where they're standing.
Yep. There you go. So that's where Pavel was. And Pavel.
So there's just
Pavel is no more.
A sphere gone, but there's a tiny little spire underneath each of the goblins and the wizard, and then just nothing else.
Right.
Where's Pavel?
Yeah. It does say though that the player wasn't too upset with this because it gave him the chance to re-roll, but it was completely unintentional for the Thunderwave to kill him. The wizard figured they had less hit points than Pavel, and there's only a tiny chance Pavel could outright die. The goblins probably could have killed Pavel anyways.
Oh no.
I can understand that.
That's, yeah.
We've been there. It's okay.
Oh no.
All right. So we're going to raise a glass in memory of Pavel, the remarkably average guy. Clink. All right.
Oh crap. That clink killed Pavel.
No. That was conflict, Jeff.
Oh no.
Jeez. All right. To submit questions for us to discuss, items for the Dragon's Hoard, or stories for the funeral pyre, please email us at interpartyconflict@gmail.com. For show notes, a running list of questions asked, and important links, go to interpartyconflict.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/interpartyconflict, or our subreddit at reddit.com/r/interpartyconflict, where I post weekly discussion questions for you. And you can find us on Twitter at @inpartyconflict. Find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, YouTube, anywhere you download podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe, or just tell a friend. If you want more people to listen to our podcast, which I do, the best way you can do that is by leaving a review. If you leave us more reviews on iTunes, the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, so the more likely people are to find us.
Yeah, cool.
And we've gotten a few more reviews in the last few months. Nice. So that's been pretty cool. So yeah, keep it up. We recently started a Patreon, so check out the rewards at patreon.com/interpartyconflict. There's a few different tiers, so anything you can spare, even $1 a month, would go towards making the show better, and you'll get bonus content for it. Mm-hmm. Jeff, you want to tell us about FriendQuest?
FriendQuest is it's a channel on YouTube. We played a couple games on that. I've been looking into doing point-and-click stuff, and then there's actually a newer point-and-click adventure made by the guy who made Monkey Island, which is one of my favorite point-and-click.
Is it Thimbleweed Park?
Thimbleweed Park, yes.
I have that. I picked that up not too long ago. I haven't actually... Yeah. I've played the first, like, 5 minutes.
I haven't played it yet. I recently picked it up. I haven't played it yet because I want to try and record it the first time I play it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Because I consider myself pretty good at point-and-click adventures.
I am terrible at point-and-click adventures.
I mean, like, I'm not great. I'm not great, but I'm pretty good. And, like, I've played the Monkey Island, the first two Monkey Island games, which were by Ron Gilbert, who made Thimbleweed Park.
Yeah.
And like I think I understand the way he thinks, in at least to a little point. So like, I understand his sense of humor and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to playing it, and I think I'll try to record it the first time I play it just to get that like initial reaction on it or something. Sure. So we'll see.
Cool. All right, and you can head over to bit.ly/interpartyconflict to take a short survey about our show, what you like, what you don't like, etc. And just for taking it, you'll get 2 free printable board games, courtesy of Mary and Tom over at hollandspiel.com. And our music is made by Boxcat Games from Nameless the Hackers RPG.
Gabe, how come you never tell us the name of the guy from Boxcat Games?
Well, because that's the conflict, Jeff.
Jeez. Bye.
Bye.